Hello, everybody. It's been 2 weeks. Good to see you. Welcome into the Calling It NFL Recap for Week 8. My name's Alex Barth. We're joined by Alex Lebowitz and from regional media in Macomb, Illinois, Sam Cooperman joining us to break down the Week 8 slate, preview Sunday and Monday Night Football. We got a lot to get into. There were a lot of bye weeks this week, but a lot of action wedged into not so many games. So thanks for joining us, guys. We'll start with you, Coop. Your overall thoughts, halfway point of the season, Week 8, not the best week of the year, not the worst, but we got some good action.
This week was a lot better than I assumed it would be. Coming into the week, I assumed it would be a really brutal week. We saw some fun things. We saw a lot of what we knew we would see. Bears out here, as far from me, regionally. Mitchell Trubisky looked good in some areas. Really like the way he can run the football. But all in all, mostly just about what you expected from start to finish. And then a fun one up in Seattle.
Yeah, I think that it was a decent week of football. You see a lot of teams kind of solidify where they're at exactly in the NFL. There were a lot of quarterbacks who kind of stuck out to me for better or for worse. And that was kind of the most salient thing from the week in the NFL for me. But yeah, you have a lot of teams that have kind of emerged, I think. The Seahawks maybe being one of them. And obviously the Eagles continue to do what they have done in the past few weeks. But it was a good week in the NFL and kind of this is more of the real NFL and where these teams stand. I feel like that's kind of what's coming out.
All right, well, right now. Let's start. We're actually going to start with a 4 o'clock game because I guess that's just the order that ESPN has chosen to put it on. And I go by the scoreboard on that website. Cowboys and the Redskins divisional matchup. Cowboys take this one 33-19. The Boers are now 4-3. The Redskins are 3-4. And Ezekiel Elliott, 33 carries, 150, 2 touchdowns. He's having an outstanding season. Obviously, the suspension hanging over his head isn't really hurting him. The Cowboys had that rough start. They're back on track. They're now second in the division behind the Eagles, who we'll get to in a little bit. But does this team have a chance to make a run again at the playoffs like it did last year? Is this going to be one of the hotter teams in the second half? Lebowitz, we'll start with you.
I think so. I mean, they've shown that they have talent, and they have the talent to kind of make a run in the NFC, and they're benefiting from a down year in the NFL. You know, you have the Seahawks who've kind of emerged this week. The Eagles, again, one of the better teams in the league. But the Cowboys, I think out of all those teams, they at least match up talent-wise to them. So if any team's going to make a run, it's them. The only question is, you mentioned it, what's the status with Zeke? Is he going to get suspended? Is this going to uphold, or are they going to wait till the end of the year? That's still hanging over his head, and that definitely plays a huge role in you know, judging where this Cowboys team will go in weeks to come.
Well, the fact that we're talking about the Zeke Elliott thing right now is preposterous for the reason that it shouldn't be a thing. They should have just accepted the suspension, because I think this will end up going against the Cowboys' wishes at some point, and it's going to be tomorrow. I do think that Zeke will not be in uniform for the next 6 weeks. The Cowboys could have had this already over and dealt with. They could have been around where they are right now, even without Zeke. You imagine they'd be somewhere in that 3-4 range, maybe 4-3. They're 4-3 right now. So point being, it is crazy that we now have a point where for most of the rest of the regular season, we might not have Zeke Elliott on the Cowboys. As far as where this leaves them, I've been most impressed with Dak Prescott more than anything else. I do think that if Zeke's not there, if it ends up being the McFadden, Alfred Morris, and couple other guys getting the rock in the backfield there, I think they'll be able to do all right and well enough where Dak is throwing the ball well right now. He didn't do it much today, given that there was that just torrential downpour in Washington. But I'm not too concerned with Dallas, but the next four will be telling. Versus Kansas City, a team that's looked awfully good. At Atlanta, Falcons, a team that can always turn it on. And then those Eagles you mentioned, Alex. And then San Diego, LA. That should be
I did that like 10 times.
Yeah,
today.
I'm going to keep doing that because it'll really never be LA to me. But point being, I think the next four will be telling for Dallas, and at least that next three. Those could go three one way or the other, quite frankly.
Yeah, I like this Cowboys team. You're right. The schedule coming up for them is interesting, but I think whatever the case may be, week 17, that flex game is going to be the NFC East again. It's going to be a stretch to the finish in that division. In Cleveland, the Browns fell to the Vikings. Oh, no, actually, not in Cleveland. No,
in London.
Because yeah. The NFL only wants to send their best overseas. The Vikings beat the Browns 33-16. The Vikes quietly are 6-2 and atop the NFC North. The Browns fall to 0-8 and are at the bottom, of course, of the AFC North. Coop, we were talking a little off the air about the Browns. We'll start with you.
Yeah, about the Browns. Shout out to Hugh Jackson for which might be the first time this season, not actually benching his quarterback that's supposed to be developing during the game. Look, Cleveland's in this for the long haul. The management there with Sashi Brown and DePodesta, they're not looking to win this year. They're looking to develop some talent, and they've had some bad luck. But on both sides of the ball, they have been able to develop some talent. It's not showing in the record book. But as far as Minnesota, you talked about that. Teddy Bridgewater will be back very soon. They have the bye coming up, and after that, Teddy Bridgewater could be back under center, which would be huge with how everybody else is playing. You have two very stout receivers, Adam Thielen along with Stephon Diggs. Of course, you have that big tight end, Kyle Rudolph, and they've been able to run the ball successfully despite the unfortunate injury to Dalvin Cook, and that defense is as stout as any. So I think the Vikings have to be very confident right now, and they did in London what you'd expect them to do is throttle the Browns.
Lebowitz.
Yeah, I don't know if you want to go to Teddy Bridgewater, because what they're doing right now with Case Keenum seems to be working. It's when you have something good going, why fix it, especially with
you
the
have
Packers?
You have to. I'll let you do your point, but my general point is you have to. But go for what you were going to say.
No, well, I don't think you do.
Because Teddy Bridgewater is the guy you drafted first round who you have a lot of stake in, who you're expecting to do something with. Look, Case Keenum has looked good in spots, but Case Keenum is not leading them anywhere. He's looked good, again, at times. But we've
but
seen
you're putting
enough,
the guy in week nine, week 10.
We've seen enough of a sample size. Maybe Bridgewater.
The guy's been out for over a year.
They'll take it slow with him. But I was listening recently to a podcast, and I forget which NFL insider said this, but as far as being ready to go, medically clear to practice means medically clear to play. So Teddy Bridgewater is healthy. They didn't want to put him in this week in London because that pitch or whatever the British say they're playing on is awfully bad on quarterback's knees and just knees in general with the way that grass is. So yeah, let Teddy go into the bye, gets a couple of weeks back. You expect him to be out there after the bye, and that seems like what it would be. And quite frankly, for a team that is at this point and expects to have their franchise guy back there, he should be in the lineup.
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. I just wouldn't. I think Case Keenum's done a pretty good job. I think Teddy Bridgewater, there's going to be a transition period. He's been out for over a year, well over a year. You can't just put a guy back in there and expect him to be the same player that he was. It's a transition period. And I think it would be counterproductive at the end of the day with everything you have going with Case Keenum. I'm not saying he's like an MVP candidate type guy, but it's working. It's working. That's my point. In regard to the Browns, it's funny that they're awful again, and they're probably going to take a chance on another quarterback. You talk about how they keep pulling the guy they're trying to develop. Well, they're going to bench him next year because they're going to take a quarterback with one of those top three picks.
I got to side with Lebowitz on this one in terms of Teddy Bridgewater. I think, yes, he is their future. He should be their starter next year, but you're 6-2. Don't rush the kid back into it. It's tough to come into an NFL season for anybody mid-year without the full off-season regimen, and especially on a team that's playing as well as they are with the injury he had. Look, maybe Case Keenum loses next three games. They fall to 6-5, and it's another story. But the way it's going right now, that team's playing very well. They've lost Dalvin Cook, and they're still winning. And that leads me to believe there is something in Case Keenum. If it's not the raw ability, maybe just having him in the huddle and in the locker room is making the difference. All right, the Patriots.
I just want to say one quick thing. And I don't want to hold you. The one quick thing is you do realize they've let Teddy sit for over a year. They've taken it about as slow as you can. At some point, you got to let the guy play. But again, I respect your points, and I do think that's fair. We can move on to the Pats.
He shredded his knee. I think you can't take it too slow with the guy who had the injury he had. Patriots, Chargers, Pats take this one late, 21-13, thanks to a bunch of field goals from Stevens and Gostkowski. Should have been a couple more. They have a kicker problem. Pats are 6-2 going into the bye. Chargers lose their three-game winning streak. They are 3-5. Now, Lebowitz and I will talk about this game tomorrow on the weekly Callin' It podcast. You can find that on our Twitter page, at Callin' It podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and SoundCloud as well. Big announcement coming on the show tomorrow as well, so make sure you tune into that. But, Sam, we'll get your take on the game since we won't have you tomorrow. What you thought as an objective observer of this East-West matchup?
I don't think anything from the Pats really surprised me one way or the other. It's the Pats. You know what they're going to do. And, you know, they're moving along. But here's the one thing I will say. Angry Phillip Rivers is the best Phillip Rivers. And
oh, yeah.
I had a good time this afternoon.
All right, so from a team that you say is very predictable to maybe two of the most volatile teams in the NFL, AFC matchup between the Bills and the Raiders. And who saw this? The Bills win 34-14. The Bills are 5-2 and towards the top of the AFC. The Raiders are 3-5, and in Week 8, their season might be over. I know they lost Derek Carr for a little bit, but I am shocked to see the fall this team has taken. I'm probably more surprised by the Raiders' ineptitude than the Bills' success. Which way do you guys feel? Which has been a bigger surprise to you? The Bills at 5-2 or the Raiders at 3-4? We'll start with Lebowitz.
The Raiders at 3-4, absolutely, because I think we know what the Bills are, and you also have to take into account that teams like the Raiders are 3-4 right now, and that's playing into the Bills' hands in regard to, you know, strength.
Couldn't you flip that? It's playing into the Bills that the Raiders are what they are.
No, that's what I'm saying. The reason the Bills have had such a good season is because they face teams that are just not doing what they should be doing.
Or the Raiders are what they are because the I'm back. Okay, keep going.
You had it backwards. I hear what you're saying, though. I think it's the other way around. I think the Raiders have been so underwhelming this year. You can't help but be disappointed in this team. They have the quarterback of the future, a guy who people had in like the top three, top five in the league last season, and someone who, you know, was ahead of Carson Wentz in regard to young quarterback hype. That's not the case anymore, and I know he's dealt with injuries, but this Raiders team has been extremely inconsistent, and at some point, you got to look at the coach and maybe think he might not be the guy, Del Rio out there in Oakland, but it's been extremely disappointing with the Bills. I love it. I want them to keep winning because inevitably, they're going to show their true colors, and they're not going to go far in the playoffs, I don't think. I they're just not that good of a team. They can keep winning. It will just build those Buffalonians up with more hope, and then they will, you know, they'll be very disappointed. It'll be great.
Buffalo will happen. Sam,
here's my thing on this, and it is very shocking that the Raiders' season has gone to this kind of tailspin, especially given that they had to have been in the top five in odds to win the Super Bowl coming into the season. But I do think a lot of that, and that's not all of it, a lot of that has to do with the Carr injury that has hampered him really since week three, and he hasn't looked himself. He's come back, and he's been all right. But I think the bigger story is Buffalo because, look, here's the thing. We've seen this song and dance at the beginning of the season with Buffalo over the past 10 years. We've seen it where you'll get that first month of the season. Buffalo's 3-1. They'll be looking good. And then usually at some point they'll face the Pats, and it all kind of falls off. And right before that you'll get Chris Berman showing the old No One Circles the Wagons video back when he was doing Countdown, and then you get him sinking the putt in Hawaii, and then Buffalo stinks, and they'll finish like 6-10. But we're not seeing that. This is a different Bills team. Also doing it after trading away so many impactful players on their defense, and even doing that this week with Marcell Dareus, and also have to factor in the fact that coming into the season, this team didn't even want Tyrod Taylor. Sure enough, he is the man leading the charge at quarterback, and he's doing enough to win these games. And for a team scoring 34 points with him there, you got to be impressed with what Sean McDermott and company are doing up in Buffalo.
Yeah, a couple things, just comments on what you guys said. Interesting, love what you bring up, Jack Del Rio. People were very high on him at the end of last season, but he's not a guy that has a history of success, and maybe he's not the coach that can take them over the top. I hadn't thought of that. That's a good point. Coop, you mentioned the Bills' annual late collapse. Weeks 15 and 17, the Bills play the Miami Dolphins. I would not put it past the Buffalo Bills to be knocked out of the playoffs by a bad loss to Jay Cutler.
But it's usually not a late collapse with them. It's more of the after September collapse. It's usually things just start falling off at that point. I remember it was two seasons ago, actually, when the Bills won that game at the end of the season to knock the Jets out of playoff contention. That was pretty fun.
Was it 3 years ago when they lost to what at the time was a 2-win Raiders team to cost them a playoff spot?
Oh,
and last year, they lost to Cleveland last year. That was Cleveland's lone win.
Yeah, but at that point with the Bills, those teams were not looking like anything.
No, the Bills were still in it last year.
They were in it technically, but they were just kind of going through the treacherous conditions.
No, I remember texting somebody we all know who still very much was convinced the Bills were making the playoffs.
Yeah, bottom line is I think that we can all agree that we're surprised by the Bills, and this is a team that looks different than in years past. They're winning the games convincingly, and I think that's a pretty telling sign.
Yeah, it is. And look, I'm a big Tyrod Taylor guy. I don't understand. I think, Coop, you mentioned that, why they want to run him out of town. I think he's a top 10 quarterback in the NFL.
They wanted to. I don't agree.
I knew you weren't down on Taylor, but it's a surprise that they finally find their quarterback. Still, and this will change this year, probably the last quarterback to lead the Bills to a 500 record, this guy.
Drew Bledsoe.
Last quarterback. I just happen to have that next to me. Last quarterback to lead the Bills to – I realize this is going to be a podcast, so I held up a Drew Bledsoe jersey. Last quarterback to lead the Bills to over 500 record. All right. Colts and Bengals. Give me something from this game, anything. Bengals win 24-23. They're 3-4. Colts are 2-6. I think Lebowitz and Coop, you're new to this, but we generally have an game of the week. Normally, yeah. it's been a primetime game, but I think this is our eh game.
I think any game the Indianapolis Colts play in this year will be an eh game, quite frankly.
Fair enough.
That's true. But Jacoby Brissett, he'll be a starter in the NFL. He'll be one of those, you know, Josh McCown, Tom Savage guys who will be a starting quarterback for a bad team. I think he solidified that that's at the very least how good he is. So there's some positive. Some guy has a career made now because he has filled in the void for Andrew Luck. Not very well, but he's done it. He's done an all right job. He's only in his third year in the league, but he's done our second year actually. So I think Jacoby Brissett being a guy who will be a starter in the NFL is one takeaway you get from this season alone.
I feel for Jacoby a lot because, first of all, your Tom Savage comment was outrageous. Tom Savage is only a starter because aside from now, Deshaun Watson, Bill O'Brien is attracted to bad quarterbacks. For whatever reason, I don't know why. The man loves bad quarterbacks, but luckily Deshaun Watson is bucking that trend. He's been outstanding. But back to Jacoby, I feel for the guy because he is now having to pick up the pieces from the remnants of the disaster that was Ryan Grigson. He's got pressure coming all which ways all the time. He doesn't have reliable receivers. T.Y. Hilton is a talented player, but he's not a number one option.
And is now reportedly on the trade block.
Jacoby Brissett is really dealing with a tough situation, and he came into this situation, what was it, 8 days before the regular season? So big credit to him, and I think he'll be better than just the guy that can fill in. I do think he'll have a role as a starter in this league, and he has looked impressive in a lot of spots and clearly has those leadership intangibles, which for a lot of quarterbacks are few and far between.
Yeah, I've been impressed in what I've seen from him, and I'm happy he got his chance, and who knows how long it'll last. I'm not confident in Andrew Luck's ability to return, if not soon, maybe at all. I mean, that guy has been beat up, and it's a shame what the Colts did to him. By the way, Ryan Grigson, now working for the Cleveland Browns. Down to the Bayou, the Saints hosting the Chicago Bears. Saints take this one 20-12. After starting 0-2, they've won five straight. The Bears fall to 3-5. The Saints team, they've gotten hot since losing the Patriots. They won five in a row, but it's been against a relatively weak schedule. Do you buy into this Saints team? Sam Cooperman, you're first.
Well, the week schedule always factors in because I'll talk about my New York Football Giants here for a second in that because last year we were very high
because
on the Giants.
Because they're a team that's weak spot on anybody's schedule?
That too. But we were high on the Giants last year going 11-5 in the regular season. But looking back on that schedule, the Giants were barely scoring over 20 points a game. It was a struggle to get to 20. The defense was outstanding. But my point here is this. The season before, they had the 9th overall pick in the draft. So you get a bad schedule. The Saints have been mediocre for really as long as I can remember. So the schedule isn't all that great. And you talk about some of the early season wins. They've won those five straight games. But the big thing from this is I think New Orleans could be all right. The next four games, not looking too bad versus Buccaneers. At the Bills, surprisingly good. Versus Washington, can't seem to get things figured out. And at the Rams, you never know. But I do think New Orleans will be headed to the playoffs just because five wins at this point, it's starting to get to a point where you could start counting down this game, this game, this game, and that should be enough. So we'll see. But I think the bigger story from this game is what we saw on the Bears side. That defense is something that Chicago can really build around. Mitchell Trubisky, the stats aren't eye-popping. 14 for 32, 164 yards and a pick. But for me, his ability to break off the long plays with his legs, a 46-yard run. Once John Fox is out after this year, because quite frankly, he needs to go. He's too old school. His play call, not necessarily the play calling, but just his whole design and his schemes are just so boring. Once the Bears have a new young coach in there, I do think they will take off under the leadership of Mitchell Trubisky, and especially when they get some receivers around him too to make some plays. Leading receiver for the Bears, Trey McBride III. I didn't know who that was coming into today. I'm sure you didn't either.
I'll say that defense, Eddie Jackson, baby, roll tide. Levis, go ahead.
So with the Saints, I mean, I could see them making somewhat of a run. I could see them finding their way into the NFC Championship game. I think they will make the playoffs, but I think that's really their ceiling, getting to that NFC Championship game, which is good. But, you know, you have Drew Brees as your quarterback, you might expect a little bit more. But they are what they are. It's kind of the Saints most seasons in the NFL, or at least the past 3 years. They're a good team. They have potential. They could make a run. I'm not betting on them because what have they really proven? Another big story from this game that wasn't mentioned, Drew Brees getting to 6,000 career completions. Yep. So it kind of got me thinking about what his legacy is, and he's obviously closer to, you know, a Dan Marino than he is a Tom Brady. But it definitely, the guy's put up some numbers, and you got to give him some respect for that.
Let's take a look back in the time machine here, guys, and remember when the Miami Dolphins, when Drew Brees was a free agent, decided that some of his health issues were a little too concerning, so they took the safe option of Dante Culpepper.
And who is the head coach? Nick Saban. Roll Tide. We got a question here on YouTube from Rob. Guys, give me fact or fiction. Saints win the NFC South. Lebowitz, you're first.
Fact. I don't think they have a ton of competition in that division, and they've been playing pretty well, at least good enough. So by default, I think fact. I'm not buying into the Panthers at all. So yeah, I'm going with them. Yeah.
Cool.
Strong disagree there. I'm going to sell it for this reason. The Panthers defense has been outstanding. That defense, and we'll talk about them more in depth when we get to the Tampa game, but I think that defense has been a big catalyst. Once Carolina gets Greg Olsen back at tight end, that will be a major difference. He's a essential factor in what Cam Newton likes to do. So that offense will start to click near the back end of the season. Greg Olsen expected back week 12, recovering from that broken foot. So that will make things a lot more favorable in Carolina's position offensively. But defensively, this defense looks so sharp, and I think that'll be enough to carry them to the top of the NFC South.
I guess I have to hop off the Buccaneers bandwagon at some point. I was really high on that team. I think 2-5 is the point where I get off. I'm going to go with Coop, though. I like the Panthers at 5-3. The Saints, it'll be close. It'll come down to the wire, but I like the Panthers. Falcons, Jets in New York. Falcons take this one on a late comeback, 25-20. They come back from down 2 scores. That's right. The Falcons came back to win from down 2 scores. They're 4-3. The Jets fall to 3-5. Both of these teams now sort of trending in the direction we expected. Big bounce back game for the Falcons after 2 bad losses to the Patriots and Dolphins. The Jets now at 3-5. They've lost 2 in a row. It's looking a little more like what we expected. Did we see the real version of each of these teams? Because these are two teams that it's been hard to put an identity on to this point in the season. I think we got a real look at what each of these teams is in 2017. Maybe the first time we've seen really what each of these teams is in 2017. Coop, you're first.
It's really puzzling with the Falcons offensively. And again, the weather was terrible in New York today, so that rain was a huge factor in the Falcons' inability to really pass too consistently offensively. Got a couple big plays sprinkled in there to make the yardage look a little more favorable. Then it really played out during the game. But this Steve Sarkisian offense for Atlanta is not working. And if it continues at this pace – yeah, exactly, shocker. But at this point, if it doesn't – get fixed in one way or the other, whether that's letting Sarkisian go, realizing that he's not the answer, or finding a way to tweak things. I don't know how you go about doing that, but if they don't do that, this is no more than a team that's going to be out after the first round of the playoffs.
Lebowitz.
Yeah, this was a must win for the Falcons. I mean, if they lost this game, it would have been goodbye to their season. Even with the win, I didn't watch a whole lot of it. I was focused on the Pats game, but I feel like it's not enough this season around for them. It seems like they haven't really recovered all the way from that Super Bowl loss, and they're just not the team that they're not performing like they should. On paper, they're stacked on both sides of the ball, but they've just been extremely underwhelming this year, and it's another team, you know, along with the Raiders, that's been disappointing to watch, and it has kind of contributed to this down year in the NFL.
I said it at the beginning of the season, I'll say it again, Super Bowl hangover. They're going to finish 8-8, 9-7, miss the playoffs. They look to be right on pace for that. If I'm a Jets fan right now, first of all, I'm shuddering at that thought. And then I'm hoping that this continues. You see what Saquon Barkley's doing, and there are very few running backs in the NFL that matter. It's starting to become an irrelevant position. But seeing what Zeke is doing in Dallas, I want me some of that. If I'm a Jets fan, I want that top pick. I want Saquon Barkley. You go back to when they almost had a chance to take Reggie Bush. Saquon Barkley, to me, looks more of an NFL real deal than Reggie Bush.
I'm a Giants fan. I want him.
What's up?
I'm a Giants fan. I want Saquon. He looks fantastic.
Everybody should. Everybody. Now, I still think Bo Scarborough is the best running back in college football, but I'm a nut. But I think Saquon Barkley, every team should want him, but especially the Jets, kind of with what they've built. And we saw today against Melvin Gordon, the problems teams like the Patriots have with runs up the middle. I would be really doing everything I can do to get him if I'm the Jets. Another team, though, that might have a say in that is the San Francisco 49ers. They fell to the Eagles today, 33-10 in Philly. My favorite moment from this game, Zach Ertz catches the touchdown, gives it to Mike Trout in the stands. Mike Trout will be a Philadelphia Philly at some point soon. I'm going to put that out there. You can go take me on that. Angels are going nowhere. They need to move them, but that's another topic for another show. Eagles improved to 7-1, best record in football. 49ers fall to 0-8, tied for the worst record in football. So my question to you two, and we'll start with you, Lebowitz. Was this really the best team in football against the worst team in football from an X's and O's eye test point of view?
So far, yes. I'd say the Eagles have been the best team in football. I don't think the 49ers are the worst. I think the Browns are worse than the 49ers. So I'd say no on the entire question. But this is kind of an eh game to me because it kind of went as I expected. The Eagles have been good. 49ers have sucked. It was a lopsided victory for Philadelphia. One thing that's interesting, though, is we talked about it. The Cowboys are starting to you know, get a little bit better. They've improved their play at least this week, and it seems like if Zeke doesn't get suspended, which he might, they're on the right track. So that's the big takeaway today in regard to the Eagles. They have another division rival that's actually playing to their capabilities.
And maybe, just maybe, the Eagles kind of feel the Cowboys breathing down their neck.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I think with the 49ers, they're not as bad as the record says they are, because you look at how many games have been lost by one possession. It was four straight between – actually, excuse me, I think that's five straight. Seahawks week two, Rams week three, week four, the Cardinals, week five, Colts, and then week six, the Redskins. So this is a 49ers team that, again, not going anywhere this season by any stretch of the imagination, certainly not now at 0-8. But I do think that they play better than 0-8, and there's a significant gap between San Francisco and Cleveland. But both teams aren't concerned about this season or even next season, quite frankly. As far as the Philadelphia Eagles, they really have impressed me. And Carson Wentz, his composure, that's one thing. But defensively is where the Eagles have really surprised me, just the way that defense has been able to perform consistently throughout this season, led by Fletcher Cox there up front. But a lot of strong additions throughout that defense. And, well, Doug Peterson's team, 7-1, looking real good. And right now, 7-1, first place in the NFC East.
I'll say this about the Niners. I think I've said this on the show before. I like C.J. Beathard. I think he can be a serviceable NFL quarterback. I like they're giving him a chance. He didn't look terrible today. He didn't look great, but he didn't look terrible against a good Philly defense. So, and I love the draft they had in the offseason. I think John Lynch is doing things the right way out there. We have a question from Rob on YouTube. Niners trade down, fact or fiction? I'll take that. Too soon to tell. When you see what the picks look like, what the draft looks like, etc. But that's that one. We were talking about the Panthers before. They pick up the win to move in five to move to 5-3 in Tampa against the Bucs, who fall to 2-5. I am very disappointed in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Shame on them. That should have been a juggernaut offense with Jameis Winston, Mike Evans, DeSean Jackson, Cameron Brate, O.J. Howard, Charles Sims, Doug Martin. That should have been a great offense. They've squandered a chance in a weak year in that division to go back to the playoffs. That is just a snake-bitten franchise. That's my take. I have to jump off the Bucs bandwagon at this point at 2-5. I'm disappointed. I do. That should have been a good team. But the Panthers, 17-3, snap a two-game losing streak. Cam look good. Coop, I know you want to talk about the defense, so we'll start with you.
Yeah, the defense for Carolina has been outstanding. And it was just a few years ago we were saying, how on earth did they let Josh Norman go? But just from top to bottom, Carolina's defense is one of the best in the league. Luke Kuechly leading that in the middle linebacker slot, and just throughout that stout defensive line and in the secondary as well. Carolina has consistently looked dominant defensively this season, and I think that's why Carolina will win the NFC South. Like I said earlier, Cam and company will start to click at the back end of the season once they get Greg Olsen back. As far as Tampa, what's really unfortunate for this Bucs team, you guys both talk about their talent. This point in the season would be when they'd have a bye, a chance to just get things reconfigured and go on that second half run. Not going to happen. The Hurricane pushed the week one game back. And, no bye for Tampa. So they're going to have to play this one out week by week. And Saints next week, we talked about New Orleans possibly winning the NFC South. That's a tough matchup. The Jets is no gimme either. And then you have that game makeup at the Dolphins. So that bye would come in a couple weeks. So Tampa will not get the luxury of that. I don't see how Tampa responds, and it's unfortunate because there is talent there. I do like a lot of things about Jameis Winston, and you talk about all the weapons around him, and we're a bunch of D3 football fans, and there's been some struggles there with their center as they moved Ali Marpet there, the Hobart product. There's a lot of questions with this Tampa team.
Yeah, You know what? Both quarterbacks, I think, have kind of gotten to a point where I'm over them. Jameis Winston's a guy who has so much talent, but he can't seem to get it done with all the weapons he has. They brought in DeSean Jackson this year. You have Mike Evans, who's a top wide receiver in the NFL. Like, this is O.J. Howard, a really, really good Tampa Bay offense, and they just can't seem to get anything done. You have to give credit to the Panthers. Their defense has been spectacular this year, but still, it's week after week that Jameis Winston and this defense and this offense, the Tampa Bay offense, has just not been what we thought they could be. In regard to the Panthers, yeah, they have a great defense. I think Cam Newton is done. I think he's a mediocre quarterback at this point. He makes a lot of mistakes, and I don't have a lot of confidence in the guy.
I don't either, but I will say this, like I said earlier, Alex, I think he was going to start slow coming into the season because he was nicked up in the preseason, some shoulder issues, and a lot of different writers and people with more knowledge about the team than I have talking about Cam. It was a matter of just him feeling things out. Greg Olsen going down week two is a huge blow to Carolina, and they're just getting started. But when you have a defense performing this well, and we're not going to see MVP Cam Newton. In fact, we won't see anything even close to that ever again. That season was something off the charts, and I don't think we'll even get to that point again. That said, I do think we'll see Cam Newton as a consistent top 10, maybe even near top 5 at some point down the line quarterback in this league once things are back to the way they're supposed to be with their big target Greg Olsen in there.
All right, well, I'm going to move on to the next game because we're kind of up against it here. And we haven't even talked about the best game of the week yet. We save our last recap for best recap for last. Seahawks 41, Texans 38 out on the West Coast. Seattle improves to 5-2. The Texans fall to 3-4, 28 combined points in the fourth quarter. DeAndre Hopkins, Ben Nahn, if you're watching, I know I told you to trade him in fantasy this week. I am sorry. 224 yards on 8 catches and a touchdown. Russell Wilson, though, goes for 452 and 4 touchdowns, including a late game winner to Jimmy Graham. This has to be, I don't know if you guys saw the end of this game, if you caught it on Red Zone or whatever, top 5 game of the year. Coop, I see you nodding.
Oh, no question about it. This game was tremendous from start to finish. It's nice to see Deshaun Watson leading this team and for Bill O'Brien's Houston Texans team to have a quarterback that understands how to throw the ball downfield. Again, shout out Tom Savage, not a quarterback that falls under that category. But as far as this game, it was back and forth. It was exciting. A lot of points on the board as you got 79 points on the board in this game and throwing down the finish. What's interesting about Jimmy Graham is there were reports surfacing today that the Seahawks in need of a left tackle, they'd be willing to part ways with Jimmy Graham to make that happen in a trade. Jimmy has 2 touchdowns on the day. Curious if that's is something that just catapults his trade value. Maybe something happens, or maybe they say, you know what? We do have to keep Jimmy Graham here. He gives us a lot of different options that do make sense, but I don't know. I do think that this was a fun game, and what it means in the Graham scheme of things, probably not a whole lot, but it was fun to watch.
Yeah, it was a great game. It's the current Russell Wilson playing against the future Russell Wilson. You saw two good quarterbacks. Obviously Russell Wilson's proven himself, but Deshaun Watson, he had a couple picks. I'm not going to fault him for that last one at the end of the game. He's just trying to, you know, get it down the field. But he's made some rookie mistakes, obviously, but he seems like the real deal. He's just comfortable. He's cool, calm, and collect in the pocket. And even when he goes outside of the pocket, he can throw on the run. He's just really impressive. And I'm not the first one to make this point. I think it was like Paul Prisco or CBS who tweeted it out. This was a great game. This is a shootout. But these two teams are supposed to be known for their defense. And you have the Seahawks giving up 38 points to this Texans team and the Texans giving up a lot of points to a Seahawks team that struggled in the beginning of the year. It seems like they've each found something, but it is odd to see how different the state of the NFL is here in week 8 compared to what we thought it would be.
I think as far as the Texans defensively, with the injuries they've had, it's gotten to a point where with Merciless and then J.J. Watt, once those injuries happened, it hasn't been a team predicated on defense. The first two weeks, the Jacksonville loss was very telling. Again, the Tom Savage thing, we could talk about him all day. But then Bengals week 2 giving up 9 points. After that, it's been a significant chunk of points given up by the Texans going forward. So this defense is no longer the calling card of this team. It's going to have to come down to Deshaun Watson throwing the ball down the field, and he's doing a good job of that.
All right, real quick here, we look ahead to Sunday night and Monday night, and we actually have 2 good primetime games this week. First time we've been able to say that in quite a while. We'll start tonight in Detroit. Lions and the Steelers. Detroit comes in at 3-3, but still very much in the playoff hunt in the NFC. Pittsburgh at 5-2, trying to keep pace with the Patriots. I think there's going to be a lot of points put on the board in this game, a shootout. This would be a good chance to see. The Steelers have had all the internal issues between Antonio Brown throwing hissy fits, the issues with Martavis Bryant. Le'Veon Bell's had his issues with his touches this year. Big Ben's health. Can they put that all aside? This is a game they should win. They're going to need their offense to step up and win it. Can they do it if Pittsburgh really is the Super Bowl contender? Or even an AFC contender, like people say they are, this is the kind of game they should win. That's what I'll have my eye on tonight. Lebowitz, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big game. They're playing a decent opponent, but opponent that they should beat. And if they want to be that Super Bowl contender, they have to beat him. But, I mean, regardless, I've been impressed with what the Steelers have done in the past few weeks. Their defense is really coming around. Big Ben is looking much better than he did starting out the season. So this is a big win. This kind of sets the tone for the second half of the season for Pittsburgh in regards to, you know, where they'll stand at season's end. And they have a chance to be that second-best team in the AFC right behind the Patriots. It seems like the Pats have it locked up, and it's a fight between the Steelers and the Chiefs, and both teams playing primetime football. So it'll be fun to see. Steelers should win tonight, especially if they want to have the second half of the season that they plan on having.
Sam,
I think one way or another, it will be a 2-touchdown game in the fourth quarter, and we'll see some magic from Matt Stafford. Whether that comes down to a win or not, I don't know, but it seems like every time in the fourth quarter, if the Lions are down, and they are more often than not, they find a way to get back into it because of Matt Stafford. As for the Steelers, we don't know what Steelers team we're going to see tonight, and a lot of that has been the struggles of Ben Roethlisberger throwing the deep ball. I don't necessarily know if he's even looked much better, or the fact that Le'Veon Bell has all of a sudden come back to form after the training camp holdout, definitely slowing him down the first couple of weeks. Now that he's come back to form, I think that has helped ease the load off of Ben Roethlisberger, but he will need to perform much better, even if this team makes the playoffs, for them to be any sort of legitimate contender. Ben will have to start throwing the deep ball and just generally having a better command of the offense right now.
Sam, you mentioned that Matt Stafford magic late. Struggling Pittsburgh secondary, not very deep. They're not very good, but they've been playing well the last couple of weeks. It'll be interesting to see what they do against Stafford. I believe Golden Tate is playing in this game after being hurt the last couple of weeks, and that is definitely something to keep an eye on, as he's been surprisingly one of the better receivers in football this year. He is, in fact, playing. So we'll see how that goes. Monday night, one more game to get to. It's an AFC West battle. The Broncos head to Kansas City and Arrowhead to take on the Chiefs, who have lost two straight. Let's focus on that. The Chiefs were the darling of the NFL at 5-0. Everybody was in love with Alex Smith, in love with Kareem Hunt. They've lost two in a row. Are they still a premier NFL team, or is this the beginning of them fading into the middle of the pack? They were a playoff team last year. I'm not saying they're bad, because I don't think they are, but they truly are a middle of the pack, 9-7, 10-6 team. That's what I believe, and you're going to start to see them fade. Where do you stand on that?
I think that we'll find out tomorrow night what they're really made of. I
look at cop out much.
It is, but I look at the Broncos as a team that's kind of solidified themselves as, you know, not very good, middle of the pack. They have a decent defense, horrible quarterback situation. The Chiefs hosting them should win that game by a decent margin. If they don't, then they are not one of the top tier teams, and it's between the Pats and the Patriots. But again, they're coming off two losses, and I feel like we kind of see what teams are made of in these types of situations. I honestly have no clue how they will do tomorrow. I think they should win. I think that they're a better team than the Broncos, and there's no excuse to it even being that close when you're hosting it at home, Monday Night Football, and you're coming off the two losses that you are.
The spread right now, Chiefs by 7. The over-under, though, 42 for these two defenses. That's, I think, a high number. Sam, your thoughts?
Yeah, the Chiefs defense, you just have to think. Imagine what happens if Eric Berry didn't go down week one. Man, because he is such an impactful player, and I think that does change a lot of things defensively for Kansas City for the better. It is a defense that's very opportunistic. They're always up near the top of the league in takeaways, so you have to love that. As far as the Kansas City schemes, this has been the year of more than anything else, the falling in love with Alex Smith or Kareem Hunt, falling in love with the coaching of Andy Reid, because I, like many people, have for a long time focused on the negatives with Andy Reid, and a lot of those with not being able to understand how timeouts work and when to use them. You focus on that a lot more than you do his brilliance in terms of utilizing schemes and getting the most out of his players. You have to look at the weapons they've had around Alex Smith for most of these years, when you talk about the 9-7s, 10-6, they finally have some legitimate weapons around him, in that of Kareem Hunt, in that of Tyreek Hill, and of course Travis Kelce. And it's gone from that 9-7, 10-6 team to a team that's up near the top of the league. And I don't think that changes. I think that the Raiders loss was a loss that, hey, while Oakland isn't playing all that well, we know there's talent on that side. There's a reason why they were perceived to be one of the favorites for the Super Bowl this year. And the Steelers loss again, we never know what Pittsburgh team we're going to see. And sure enough, when you have Le'Veon Bell on that other side, always possible that you get a good Steelers matchup. I think that Kansas City waltzes in this one, unless, again, Trevor Siemian somehow is able to get things going. And real quickly, I do have to say, I don't know why John Elway doesn't get more heat, because you have a historic defense in Denver. Historic. That defense single-handedly won a Super Bowl 2 years ago. That defense led by Von Miller. They had Peyton Manning there with his neck just completely in shambles, winning a Super Bowl solely based on that defense. And Denver cannot put a quarterback around him. We give other teams heat for not having a quarterback on there with other weapons. Denver has an elite receiving core with Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders. Denver has the best defense in the league, a historic defense, yet the options there are Trevor Siemian and Paxton Lynch. John Elway deserves heat for that.
Don't forget the Brocketship.
Oh, yeah, the Brocketship. And the fact that two seasons where this catastrophe is back there under center, and Denver is going to squander this defense. Just ask Seattle how long an elite defense can last when you think it's going to last forever. That's all I have to say. John Elway needs to get his act together and get them a quarterback. Otherwise, there's nothing other than 7-9, 8-8 on their future.
Yeah, I would say the eliteness of the defense is gone. I think they've come back to earth. That's an old team, Aqib Talib, Harris, et cetera. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. I want to thank Sam Coop for joining us from Regional Media in Macomb, Illinois.
I do have to say. I should have corrected you earlier. It is Macomb, but it's okay.
Macomb, okay.
It is. You know, I thought that your recognition of towns in the middle of nowhere in Illinois would be better. Obviously, it's not. That's okay.
Well, it's spelled the same as Macon, Georgia, right?
Well, Georgia, that's Macon, Georgia.
Macon, okay.
Yeah,
it's like someplace. I'm sorry.
In other places, in here, in Massachusetts, Worcester, you know?
Yeah, that's the perennially, that's the hardest city to spell in the, or to say in the country, no question about it.
I'd say both. Yeah. All right, so Macomb, Regional Media in Macomb, Illinois, Sam Cooperman, thanks for joining us. You can follow him on Twitter, @SamCoop. Lebowitz and I will be back tomorrow. We've got a full show for you. We'll be talking Bruins. We will, of course, be recapping not just the Patriots game against the Chargers, but the first half, some Celtics talk as well. Lebowitz, I loved Kyrie this weekend. I think I have to eat some crow on that one. So you can catch that tomorrow on iTunes, on SoundCloud, or, of course, on our Twitter, @CallinItPodcast. You can follow us on there. Thanks for tuning in. Feel free to share the show, tell your friends, spread it around. Big announcement also coming on the show tomorrow. You won't want to miss it. So for Sam Cooperman and Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for tuning in. Alex, and I'll talk to you tomorrow on Calling It. Talk to you then.